I work for a company called SQL Skills. Most people know Kimberly Tripp and Paul Randall. I am not either one of them, as you can tell. I'm the guy that does development for them and works on things like security. And have website, have email. You can send me email if you'd like. Have blog, and now on Twitter at gunpoint. I'm supposed to make my public persona more well-known. Huh. Okay. So anyway, feel free to harass me on Twitter because, you know, almost everybody does. I guess I'm most well-known for having written a book in 2005 called Developer's Guide and First Look at SQL Server 2005. And since then, I've been really too busy to write books. Also wrote a book on ADO.NET. And instead of writing books for 2008, I actually wrote, I think it was 125 or so blog entries. I counted them once. And I'm already up to 25 in Denali. So if you're looking for a book, just read the blog. That's enough about me. Let's talk about full-text search. So I want to talk about the components of full-text search. I'm going to talk about the full-text search objects and the APIs that you use to get information out of full-text search, some full-text search DML. Along the way, I'm going to talk about the SQL 2008 enhancements. In fact, really what I'm going to do is start with 2008 as a baseline. And then at the very end, I'm going to talk about some Denali enhancements. And like I said, make some announcements about things that have already been announced. So let's get rid of this thing too. Are you gone? Gone. So full-text search, they call it IFTS now, integrated full-text search, but it seems like in Denali they may be going back to calling it full-text search, so I didn't know what to put. This provides the ability to search against character-based data. Now, the character-based data can be in character-based columns, varchar, nvarchar, and so forth. If you do want full-text search to go the fastest it can, though, you do want to, when you use the APIs like contains and free text, you do want to put the Unicode end symbol in there. Otherwise, it's going to do an implicit conversion to Unicode, and that will suck up some cycles. So character-based columns, var binary. And var binary is what I'm going to use today to search on HTM files. It's a good idea to search on HTM files in var binary because then you can tell full text search that it actually is an HTM file by the suffix. Otherwise, you can't do that with text-based. And for var binary in 2008, they invented something called file stream, where you can actually keep the information on files in the file system. I'm going to do a talk on that tomorrow morning at 9 about how to program file stream. But file stream works perfectly well with full text search. So you can use var binary columns against things on the file system and do a full text search on them. It works just fine. That's one of my demos for today. And you can also full text search on XML. XML is interesting because when you have full text search, what you usually tell full text search is what is the language of your full text search column. And it'll use that word breaker for full text search. When you're full text searching against XML, it will use the XML lang attribute to figure out which language it is. So conceivably, if you had XML that had nested XML lang attributes, it could actually full text search a big XML document and it would search it in different, it would have different parts in different languages. It does this for Word and it can do this for HTML as well. You can have multiple documents all in different languages and put them in the same column as long as the full text search word breaker is aware of it by using the right thing. For HTM files, which I'm going to show you coming up, the thing that it searches on is the MS locale attribute, and MS locale tells what the locale is and so forth. So its search functionality includes simple search terms with Boolean operators and fuzzy matching, that's the contains operator, prefix-based searches, but interestingly not suffixed-based searches, inflectional forms of the same word, like run, running, and ran, and words near other words or other phrases. In 2008 and below, this words near other phrases is more like an and. It does affect the rating and ranking of how close they, based upon how close they are if you use near. But if you use near in a full text search contains, all it means is that both words are in the document somewhere, right? They're really nearby. In the numerical ranking that you get for things like free text table, those things actually care about how close they are. Ranking documents by relevance and weighted values. So you can have weighted values in your search, and you can also have it go through its relevance algorithm too. It has a well-known relevance algorithm that it uses. So it has support in 2008 for over 50 languages, and you can see that by looking at SIS full text languages, a bunch of different languages that they have now. It seems like they've either got and acquired or wrote their own or bought a lot of the word breakers that they use that used to be third-party word breakers. So, for example, Arabic used to be a third-party word breaker that you have to buy in 2008, it's included. And they've pretty much redone all of the word breakers in 2008, so they work a little bit differently. In English, they didn't do that. U.S. English, though, is the same in 2008 and 2005. So for each supported language, they have to have a word breaker and a stemmer. The word breaker, obviously, is what tells you what's words and what's not. And the stemmer is one that makes the inflectional values of it. And actually, they don't use the stemmer during full-text search. They will actually use the stemmer when you're invoking the full-text search APIs. You can have third-party word breakers as well. And that is why, to this day, the word breakers still run out of process. One of the big features in 2008 was that the queries themselves ran in process. But although the queries themselves run in process, and the full-text search index itself is in process, there's still a little service over there because they have to go over there to consult the stemmer, they have to go over there to consult the word breaker, because otherwise they didn't want to take the chance of loading components that would leak memory into the SQL Server service process. So they guarantee not to leak memory because they're still going to go over there to get the word breakers and stemmers. There's a per-instance thesaurus file, and it's still per-instance in 2008, and as far as I know, I only have CTP1, but it's still per-instance in Denali. They've talked about having a thesaurus file for every single full-text index like they do with stop words, and they still don't have those that I know of. These are just XML format files that live on the file system and include expansion sets, replacement sets, and a setting for accent-sensitive. Stop list, they used to be called noise words in 2008. They moved them into the mainstream. They basically don't have a stop word, or they used to call them noise words. They don't have a noise word for everything in the instance. You can have a stop word on a per full text index basis. So when you make up a full text index, you can say what your stop word list is. IFTS filters. So the big part of this is a set of components that all use the interface called iFilter. And iFilter is the well-known component. If you really wanted to, you could build your own iFilter. I thought about it because there's an iFilter that I want. I'll tell you about that later on. But basically, an iFilter component is provided for each document type. And full-text search knows to go out and to the registry and look for iFilters, and it will load iFilters once you've installed some new ones. There's a system-stored procedure you have to run, but it'll go out and look for iFilters and install new ones. So one of the ones I put in recently was an iFilter for MP3 files and an iFilter for JPEG files. And you might think to yourself, why would you want to search the contents of an MP3 file? We'll talk about that later. So filters implement the iFilter interface, which is well known from, you know, Microsoft Search. Examples include the Microsoft Office documents and filters for PDF files. You do have to get the right bitness of filter because this is a COM interface. It's not .NET. So you do have to get a 64-bit filter if you have a 64-bit version of SQL Server. They do come with a variety of iFilters, but the PDF one is still one that you have to download. And it's amazing now, Adobe actually makes that available as part of their install of Adobe Reader. So if you install Adobe Reader, they install the iFilter directly, and then all you have to do is reference it and load it in full-text search. So that's kind of nice. There's iFilters for, like I said, XML and HTML. I'll talk about those more. And third-party filters, of course, third-party anything can be installed. Somebody asked me, they wanted to go buy a thesaurus for a specific type of business. And I said, I don't know anybody that sells thesaurus for that kind of business right now. But conceivably, there's a lot of opportunity for third-party components in this area. Filters can be used and can be specified in a specific column. So if and only if you're actually referencing a bar binary column, you can't do this with a character column and you can't do this with an XML column, you can provide another column in the same table that says what type of document those are. So you could mix PDF documents and Word documents and everything else in the same full-text search index. And it doesn't care what they are. It wants to know what iFilter to use. And he'll load all the appropriate iFilters for that. iFiltering doesn't take place when you do queries. iFiltering takes place when you actually make the index. So it's not like it's going to hold you up to load a lot of iFilters at query time. So specifics. They used to have a big service that was based upon Windows Search. They don't have that service anymore. What they've done is they've cut it down to a specific service called the FD Host service. FD Host has to be running, and you have to be able to communicate it to do either indexing or queries. right? Because it has to go over there and consult the stemmer, and it has to go over there and consult the word breaker if you're going to do queries against it. So you have to be able to communicate to that service if you're going to be doing that. One of the things I noticed that was interesting about Denali, if you care about security at all, is the fact that they don't have, if I go up to administrative tools, and where am I, computer management, and I'd better bring my thing up while this is going on. Where was that? Sorry. I'm looking for my magnifying glass. There it is. All right. So if I go up here and I go look at all the groups that they've made for SQL Server, I do have full text search installed. Obviously, you'll see it work. And notice that there is no group, security group, for that specific service anymore. Apparently, it's part of the security group for the SQL Server service. So they don't have the FDX, the full text host, in the security groups anymore in Denali. This is a Denali machine, CTP1, and it still works just fine. FD host still runs just fine too, so they just don't have a special security group for it is all, like they do for everything else in SQL Server. FD host is used to build the IFTS index. The word breakers and filters run in this instance, and the searches actually run in the SQL Server engine. Be aware of the fact that it'll load up this thing the first time you do anything full text search, and if it doesn't work or you can't communicate with it for some reason, if you've ruined the security, and now I haven't ruined the security lately, if you've ruined the security, it'll actually just, you know, get an error message and it won't let you do the search, or get an error message and it won't let you index. Okay, so a little bit about administering full text search indexes. Full text search used to have this concept called the full text search catalog. And in 2005, the full text search catalog could actually specify what file group something could be in. And in 2005, you could specify file group, ownership, and accent sensitivity. And you could have multiple full text catalogs, and you can have one be the default full text catalog. In 2008, that went away. In 2008, it doesn't get the file group by the full text search catalog. You specify the file group on the full text search index itself. And if you don't specify the file group on the full text search index itself, it's actually going to be in the same file group as the table that's being indexed. So even though the create full text catalog actually still takes the file group as a parameter, it doesn't do anything, which I think is interesting. I guess they did it this way so that it wouldn't break backward compatibility. You create a full text search index, and it has to reside within a catalog. Maybe one of these days they'll get rid of the catalog, but the catalog does provide accent sensitivity. Full text search index is obviously DDL. Change tracking options can be auto, which means every time you insert a document, it's going to full text search, full text index the document. Be aware of the fact that it's not going to full text index the document synchronously. So if you actually put a document in and then go search for it right away, you might not see it. Manual, which means that you're going to populate it at some time that's, you know, convenient to you, and you can have it manual and or off. And the difference between manual and off is the fact that manual assumes you're going to populate it sometime on a schedule. Off, you can populate it on a schedule too, and you can actually tell it when you create the full text search index not to populate it at that time either. If you don't tell it no, off and no population, when you create the full text search index, it'll start populating it. And the reason why you care is that the full text search population can be fairly labor intensive. They've made some improvements in this area in Denali, or they're going to, is what I've heard. But the full text search indexing can take some cycles. There are parameters, the configuration options, that you can use to limit the cycles that it will take. Configure full text search IFTS properties like max full text crawl and default full text language. So you can do that with spconfigure. Anybody have any questions about the administration part of this? Okay. So programming, there's four functions. And the FTS functions are functions in Transact SQL. Two of them are table valued functions, and two of them are predicates. Obviously, the predicates are going to get rid of rows or keep rows. And the table valued functions are used to rank things. And so you get back an index key, basically, and a ranking column. And those are free text and free text table and contains table. You can do a language-specific search. You can do a multi-language search. And some of the database objects disallow IFTS functions. Like, you can't use an IFTS function on an index view. You know, I think, especially after lunch, that I've talked way too much and done way too few demos. So I think it's time for a demo. All right, let's do a demo. So I wanted to do something with a demo that was topical. And so I wanted to show you one of the differences. And you guys that have been doing full-text search forever are probably going to sit and say, yeah, we know about that one. But one of the full-text search differences between the Dutch word breaker and the U.S. word breaker, the English word breaker, both the U.S. English word breaker and the, what they call, international English word breaker do the same thing with this. Dutch and German do it a little bit differently. So what I did was I went out and glommed a bunch of web pages about this conference. There we go. And so what I did is I put the web pages out in a directory, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a full-text search database, create a catalog out of those web pages, and create two tables, one where the default language is Dutch and one where the default language is English. By the way, all of these pages have the MS Locale sticker on them, and so, or the tag on them, and so it's going to index in Dutch regardless of whether the language is Dutch or English. Right, because if it's an HTM, it will actually go from the tag. So let's just start to make sure I don't have this around anymore. Good, I did have it. And we'll create this database. Right, I'm not going to talk about how to, you know, position the files for best performance or any of this stuff. This was a developer talk, right, as in dev days. Okay, and so what I'm going to do is create the simplest possible table I can create, and I'm going to create one with an ID. I actually thought about, because this was Denali, creating one with a sequence, but we'll leave it for another time, and we'll create one with an ID that's an identity column. That's all going to also going to be used as my full-text index, because full-text search needs a unique column someplace in there to make its index with. Page name is actually going to be the name of the page. File type, I'm actually going to put the page itself in a var binary max column. And people go, well, why don't you just put the page in a varchar column? If I do put it in varchar and varchar, I can't tell if it's HTM. And so what it'll do is it'll use the text filter to filter them. And I don't want things like tags to show up as text. And so therefore, I'll put it in a var binary max column. Because I have to specify the name of the index, too, in the full-text search definition, I want to make a named index rather than have SQL Server figure out what the name for this column is going to be. And so I put the primary key in as a constraint, separate constraint. You guys that have done full-text search are like, yeah, yeah, get to the good stuff. All right, and here's another one, which is exactly the same layout. And what I'm going to do is make two different full-text search indexes over these. So I'm going to create a proc that goes out and inserts the full text page using Open Row Set Bulk. And so I've shoved all these pages out on the file system, and I'm going to, in that directory, and I'm going to load them right from that directory. Do this with Dynamic SQL, because Open Row Set Bulk doesn't like file names that have parameters in them for the entire file name, unfortunately. Here's another one for the other table, same thing. Right, okay. So what I did was I took a bunch of these pages, and I did a couple of things with them. The first one is this FAQ page actually has the word in it, pre-conference. And it has the word pre-conference as a hyphenated word, like this. And the difference between the English and the Dutch word breaker is if you have something like that, the English word breaker at execution time will actually make this into three choices: the word pre, the word conference, and if you have the English word breaker, but not if you have the Dutch word breaker, pre-conference is all one word. So that's the difference between them, and that's what I'm trying to illustrate. So in this one, this is the actual Dutch version of the FAQ page. This one is an English version with just all the tags replaced by U.S. English for the FAQ page. I can show you some of these. And this one, I actually, for the word pre-conference, I actually put in the word pre-conference as one word instead, to show you the difference between how the word breakers work and how the text works. So we're going to put in these seven pages. Go pretty fast. By default, I am going to have my full text search index to populate immediately. So this having not that many pages means it won't take that long. Good for me. So we'll create a full text search catalog called FTCAT, and we'll specify it as the default. And we'll take the accent sensitivity default here. Now, what I did with the full text index was I created a full text index on the first table, and I created it on the content column. I also gave it the name of the file type column, and I said the language for this one was Dutch. And I also had the key column in here as well. That's the one it's going to use as the doc ID. I'm going to talk about doc ID a little bit more later. And here's the same thing, except the language is set to English. And all this serves to illustrate is the fact that if it's HTM, it's actually going to go by the locale tag. It's not really going to go by the language of the that I specify here. So whether I have Dutch or whether I have English, it's still not going to go by that specifically. At this point, let's see how well it's going as far as to build my full text index. So on the Dutch pages, it can already find every place where Microsoft is, which is in every single page, of course. And The Hague, it still is in most of those pages. Right? Almost all of those pages have that in there. And one of them was the page with my name on it to see how many pages actually had there. There was three of them. So that was kind of interesting. So I wanted to show you the difference between the word breaker and the parser. Now, if I was to go look at the full text search for both of those, let me go do that first. So one of the nice things in 2008 is full text search is no longer a black box. It used to be that you 2000 and 2005, those places, basically you would put your full text search out there, you would make your search criteria, and when something came back that you didn't think should come back, or something didn't come back that you wanted to come back, you just sort of scratched your head and tried to figure out why. Let's logic it out. In 2008, they actually did some lovely things. When they moved the full text search index into the database, they gave you full text search dynamic management views to be able to go out and look at the full text search index. So that was kind of nice. You can actually see what's out there in the index. And in addition to that, they gave you a parser dynamic management view where you could key in what you're going to look for, and it will go and it'll parse those words out for you to see what it's actually going to search for. And this becomes clear as I do this example. So the way you actually get the full text search index keywords is to use this, I guess it's a it is a dynamic management view. I was going to say it's a metadata view, but dynamic management view. And I'm going to look for the full text search keywords in DBO web pages. That was the Dutch one. By the way, the keywords aren't going to be any different because everybody has the MS locale tag, and so it doesn't matter what I say the language is going to be. Notice that there's quite a few different things that they do with numbers, words right here. And what I'm going to do after this is just look for the word pre. So there's a couple of things that begin with the word pre. Notice that there are four document instances that contain the word pre, but only one document instance contains the word pre-conference. And let me show you why that is. So to show you the difference between the Dutch and the English word breaker, what I did was to go out into where the files were, and I munged one of the files. Right? This was the original, there we go. This is the original FAQ file, and I'm going to open it with Notepad just so you can see it and I don't have to hassle with it. And let me even make the font a little bigger than that. There we go. Pump it up to 16. Okay. And so what I want to do is I want to do a, notice that it has this in here and it also has this in here. Neither one of these get used because they're HTM. What actually gets used to determine what language to parse in is this guy right here, the MS locale tag. And that's a Microsoft-specific meta tag. So you do want to put that in there if you want it to parse to the right language. Otherwise, it'll just parse to whatever language you gave it. Now, what I'm going to do in here is I'm going to look for the word pre-conference just to see. And we'll find next on the word pre-conference. And we'll notice there's the hyphenated word pre-conference. If I can spell it right, I'll find it too. Okay, there we go. But there is no unhyphenated. Let's go back to the beginning again. There is no unhyphenated pre-conference in here. So there is no instance of the word pre-conference without a hyphen. Okay, great. So what I did was I took that and I changed it around a little bit. Didn't change the word pre-conference in this one. But what I did is I changed all the locale specifiers I could possibly find. I did this just to, it was kind of overkill. This is the one that they really look at. And so now I'm parsing using the English parser. Okay. Now you would think if I was parsing it with the English parser, well, we'll get to this. Okay. And what I did in here was to go in this one and substitute for the word pre-conference with a hyphen in it, the word pre-conference without a hyphen. And so if you look in this one, if you look at pre-conference without a hyphen, this is the place where it occurs. There we go. And so all I did was replace all the pre-conference by pre-conference as one word. All right. So the one with the pre-conference as one word is called EN pre-conf, just so you'll see when it comes up in the search. And the one without the with the hyphen is FAQEN, and the one that's the original Dutch with the hyphen is FAQ. And what I wanted to do was see what would happen if I put all of these in here, and notice that in the Dutch full text search index, they will not parse pre-conference with a hyphen into the word pre-conference. And so the only document that contains it is the one where I actually changed it to the whole word pre-conference. Everybody okay with that one? Okay, that's the Dutch index. In the English index, because they're going by the things in the HTML files anyway, it doesn't work any differently, right? There's four documents that contain pre, and still only one document that contains pre-conference. But watch what happens with this. This is the FTS parser. So in other words, when you invoke the word breaker to build the index, it doesn't change pre-conference into pre-conference as one word when you're building the index. Right, you saw that. There was only one document that contained pre-conference, and that was the one that I used. I put pre-conference in especially to see it. But if I actually invoke the parser for Dutch, right down here, will actually, if I put in the hyphenated word pre-conference, come up with the keyword and an exact match for the word pre by itself and the word conference by itself. Notice you don't see the whole word pre-conference. But if you do this with the English word breaker, there we go right here, notice that they do come out with the word pre-conference. So this is a little bit different for English as it is for Dutch. Apparently for French they do it the way that English does, and for German they do it the way that Dutch does, which I think is interesting because there's a lot of compound words in German. I guess they never hyphenate them. So anyway, that's the interesting part, and so let's see what that does to some of our searches. So let's go up here, and remember, really, I can do the web pages and web pages too, but they're going to come back with the same stuff, right? Because even though one said the language, I actually had them down here to not go for the language, just so you could see them. Okay, so let's just start with let's do a web pages where it contains pre-conference with a hyphen, and we'll do it in Dutch against the Dutch column. And when we do that, notice that we do get all the ones that have pre-conference, but notice that we don't get the non-hyphenated one. I don't see the non-hyphenated one in there at all. If I do the same thing in English, because the word breaker at search time will actually break it into those three words, notice I get one more document here for English. I get the one where I actually changed pre-conference with a hyphen into pre-conference without the hyphen. Everybody see the difference? So if you actually use the Dutch word breaker, it won't break the words any differently to put them in the index. But when you search for the words, it will search for the words differently, which I thought was intriguing. I would have thought that it would break them the same way with the word breaker when it indexed them as it would when it looked for them, but it doesn't do it that way. So this even becomes more fun, right? Went off. Nope, there we go, we're back. Never mind. All right, and if I look for the word pre-conference as one word, that doesn't seem to make any difference, right? It's not going to break pre-conference into three words that way. And if you actually look at this over here, if I was to invoke the parser on pre-conference without the hyphen, it doesn't do any different there either. It only gets the one word pre-conference. So it will not break compound words up, but it will put hyphenated words into compound words for you. Everybody okay with that one? And so I thought, let's try this out with free text. Because the difference between contains and free text is, by default, contains will do a regular full text search against the exact words. In free text, what they actually do is take the entire phrase, they're going to run it through the word breaker, they're actually going to get all the inflectional forms of it, they're going to run it through the thesaurus, and they're going to take out the stop words, and anything that actually would run against all those would happen with free text. So I want to see if free text did any different. And of course it doesn't. So if I do the pre-conference with one word, it's going to get one document. And if I do the pre-conference with hyphenated words in English, it's going to get all the all the documents. And if I do it with the hyphenated words in Dutch, it's not going to get that one where, oh, it is going to get this one here. Okay. Dutch. Sorry? That's the Dutch one, the language 1043. So it will do the hyphenated one, and it will get that one with a free text. And notice with each of those, it will also get them if you say free space conference, pre-space conference. This is way too many pre-conferences for me after a while, but okay. I guess I'd rather do it with that one than Bill Gates and multimillionaire, which is the one everybody uses as an example, right? I've got that one later on too. Okay. Everybody okay with that? Everybody have enough word breakers at this point? Okay. So free text, again, does all this stuff automatically, right? Invokes the word breaker, invokes the stemmer, invokes the thesaurus, invokes the stop words. When you actually don't invoke them on the phrase that you key in, it's more like a natural language search. Contains, you can do these things, but you have to do these things one at a time. In other words, contains won't get inflectional forms for you unless you use the keyword forms of inflectional. And contains won't invoke the thesaurus for you unless you use the keyword forms of thesaurus. If you don't use any of those keywords, it's just doing a regular search. Everybody okay with that? Difference between free text and contains. Now, actually, free text and contains do use different algorithms for rating. So free text table is going to have a different rating than contains table. And bear in mind that the rating algorithms, by the way, which are copiously documented in the books online, the rating algorithms also look at how many documents are in the entire corpus. In other words, how many documents are in the entire set of documents that you put in the full text column. So if you put more documents in, it'll get a lower rating. You can have a language-specific or multi-language search. Somebody asked me, how could you have a multi-language search when you can only specify one language? And you can have a multi-language search, if you think about it, by just doing a search in one language, union all the search in the next language, union all the search in the third language. And basically, that would get you a multi-language search. You would have to do a lot of unions, so you're searching two or three times, but then you can combine them together. If you don't want to get duplicates, of course, you just use union. I already did that one. Okay, so contains is basically used in a where clause. It's a predicate. Free text is also used in a where clause. And the contains predicate can look for a word or a phrase. And by the way, if you look for a phrase, if you put it in double quotes, it's going to look for that exact phrase. It's just not any of the words that are in that phrase. Right? If you put it in single quotes, it doesn't. The prefix of a word or a phrase, and use the star wildcard with that. Near, or you can use with a tilde instead of the word near. That basically, like I said, in Full Text Search 2008 is just an and. If one is in the document and the other one is in the document, then returns true for the predicate. If you're using the table, they'll rank a little differently. A word inflectionally generated, so you say forms of inflectional, and a word that's a synonym using the thesaurus. And I've got another thesaurus example coming up. And you can use is about, and is about actually ranks things, and you can give weighting to the is about term. Is about uses a different ranking algorithm than full text table does, which is intriguing, I think. Doesn't use the same algorithm. So you will get different answers for is about and full text table. And you can use the logical operators in here. This is one of the places where they made performance enhancements in Denali. So I'm going to get along to that. So again, contains is used as a predicate, contains table, and free text table are analogous. So full text enhancements, integrated backup and restore since 2005. Remember that this started out as SQL Server just calling out to an instance of Microsoft Search. Microsoft Search doesn't really factor into it anymore, maybe to provide the base code base, but they've moved most of this inside SQL Server. Better query performance for 2005. And in 2008, the queries run in the SQL Server process and the full text indexes in the SQL Server process. If you want to see the exact full text index, that would be interesting. Let's go look at where the full text index is. So in DevDays 11, which is the same database I'm in order to find the index, you would actually just say select star from sys.internalTables. The full text search stuff actually lives in internal tables. And so if I go and look in here, notice what we have. We have the full text index docid status table. The full text search docid status table is when you're indexing, it's the table of every document. Is it being indexed? Has it been indexed? How many errors does it have? And so forth. The full text docid filter, if you use a docid, then it's going to have something in this table. The full text index docid, and notice these numbers after them are actually the table object IDs. So if you have multiple full text index, you can look them up by table object ID. Full text AVDL is another one that's a little bit different in Denali. I'll talk about that later. And component fragment, right here, you can have more than one fragment. And we've got the docid status. I have apparently another one. I had two of them. That's right. So I have all of these things for each one. And people say, well, what's the sense of looking at the full text index like this because I can't see inside? In other words, I can look at the sys internal tables, but if I say select star from, and notice they're all in the sys schema. So if I say select star from, and what we'll do is sys dot and copy that name in there, it doesn't look like I can see it. If you really, really, really have to troubleshoot this, So if I do it right now, it says that it's not going to be there. Okay. If you really, really, really have to troubleshoot this, basically what you do is you turn on the dedicated admin connection. Do tell your administrator you're doing this. I don't think you might even have permission to do it in some places, but if you can turn on the dedicated admin connection, what I'm going to do is change my connection. And I'm going to change my connection from the name of the machine to the word admin colon the name of the machine. Remember, there is only one dedicated admin connection in SQL Server for instance, and this is really for the administrator to use when things go horribly wrong. So you don't want to use this if things are going horribly wrong because you want your administrator to use it, unless you are the administrator. For some reason, in Denali, it gets this error, but then it connects anyway. And we're going to go into it may be that that particular connection I have set to a different default database or something that doesn't exist. So now I can go back here and do the same select. And when I do the same select, I can actually see the contents. Now, that was unimpressive because I wasn't doing any indexing right now. Let's have a look at the IFTS fragment. That is actually based upon the fact that they make up full text indexes in fragments. In other words, if I put a bunch of documents in, it's going to make up one fragment. If I put a bunch more documents in, it may make up another fragment. And then at the very end, you can have it do something called a master merge, where it merges all the fragments together. This is tremendously labor-intensive, but actually increases your performance quite a bit when it's done. Right. So right now I have one fragment, and I can look at the one fragment and see the internals of the full-text search table. There is the internals of the full-text search index right here. So if you don't really trust the dynamic management views for some reason, or you want some more information, you can go in here and look. Most of the information in here, though, is really contained within the dynamic management views. And so you really don't get that much difference by doing this. By the way, if you do try and, let's get out of the dedicated admin connection. If you do try and invoke the dedicated admin connection so that it comes up with Management Studio comes up, this is more of a Management Studio thing than a SQL Server thing. When Management Studio comes up and you're trying to connect with the dedicated admin connection, if you're trying to connect to the Object Explorer window, it says the dedicated admin connection is not supported. And so people think, oh, that means it doesn't work in SSMS. Well, what that really means is it doesn't work in the Object Explorer window in SSMS. If you look at the error message really carefully, it says the dedicated admin is not supported Object Explorer. So if you bring it up in a real window like this one, it'll work just fine here. So you don't have to go to your command line tool to be able to use this. By the way, though, like I said, if you have an administrator, do not mess with their dedicated admin connection just for fun. This is something you do on your own machine at home for some fun sometime. All right, so that is where the full text index actually is. By the way, if I was to go to the tempdb here, tempdb is actually, and I don't know if we're going to see it here because I haven't loaded the thesaurus yet. Yes, I did when I did the free text. So notice that this is where they load the thesaurus and this is where they keep it. So if you actually want to look at the internals of the thesaurus, you can look at it. It's right here, right? The phrase table, the metadata table, and so forth. So when they said they moved it into SQL Server, you can find it, and there it is. Everybody okay with this one? By the way, notice that the internals tables are not just used for full-text search. They're used for service broker queues. If I go back to a different database that supports more of this stuff, queue messages, file stream, tombstone table, and syscommit table is also for file stream. So you'll see a lot of the internal things use this sysinternal tables. If you really want to try and XML indexes are there, spatial indexes are there. Anyways, you can tell I like internals. All right. So engine features, that's integrated into the database engine and stored as an internal table. Gee, that was a nice demo at the right time. Backed up and restored with the database, so you don't have to worry about separate backups. Memory managed by the database engine, but like I said, it can interfere with the rest of the database engine, so you can fix the memory. And there's no perf hit from OADB-based data access. Basically, what they used to do is when full-text search actually ran in its own service and they did the search over there, they would actually call over there with the OADB provider. And now they don't call over there with the OADB provider. They will call over there if you want to invoke the stemmer or the WordBreaker, but they won't call over there to actually do the search itself. All the search itself actually takes place in SQL Server. And as long as we're talking about that, this is better than it used to be, but let's actually go and look at one of the query plans for this. So if we go look at a query plan for full-text search, here we are. and this is just a free text query right here. Full text search actually works by invoking a table valued function. It has its own streaming table valued function. So it will actually return the first couple of rows fast. And what it actually returns from this table valued function, if you look at it, there we go, just hover over it. The output list over here, and maybe somebody other than me can see it. There we go. The output list over here is just going to be a set of doc IDs. So I'm going to talk about what you'd want to use as a doc ID in the next demo and why this is important. But basically, the internals of that are sort of hidden from you. And so you really can't see much more than full text search function. By the way, you could probably look that up someplace too. I just haven't got to it yet. I will let you know when it gets disassembled. All right. So they don't do OADB cross-process access anymore to be able to do that. The indexing engine external process is more reliable than secure than it used to be, but do remember that if you load in third-party word breakers, they're not responsible if it runs out of memory, obviously. Index require upgrade from 2005. They don't, as far as I can see, require upgrade from 2008 to Denali, so that's good. And there's a lot of new and revised word breakers in there. So did I just do this? I said that it's integrated into the SQL engine way too much. Okay. All relational operators can be used with the full-text search features, and filters can be applied anywhere. The other big change in 2008 is there's no surrogate keys for doc IDs. It used to be that when you made up your full-text search index, you would specify a unique identifier column, and they would use that unique identifier column, and they would have to correlate that unique identifier column with a different column with your primary key, and there was an extra search step. So now there's no surrogate keys in use if the primary key is an integer, and so I want to talk about that in my next demo. Noise words are now called stop lists, and they're database objects. They're stored in internal tables. You can configure them on a full-text index basis, and you can alter them on the fly, so they're configurable on a per-column basis. So let's do another one here. And actually, this one is going to use file stream, and we'll do that here. So this one is a rather interesting one because I've had to do some of this in advance because this was fairly labor-intensive to do. There we go. So what I did was I went out and I gathered up all the log files from my system. So there's a bunch of log files, and the names of all these log files are in fulltext.txt. And so what I have here is a SQL command window so that I could run SQL commands and external commands at the same time. This is an SSMS feature. It doesn't use, doesn't use XP command shell. Of course, it only works in using SSMS, too. I'm going to configure it to make sure I have the file stream access level right. It's fine. It was 2, and I changed it to 2. So now I can use file stream. So I'm not going to do this part about the if the exist and gather up all that because it does take about 20 minutes to do that. I know I don't have an IFTX one now, so I won't do that, and I'll create a database here called IFTS. Oh, that I don't need that there. And when I create the database for IFTS, what I'm going to do in this case is I'm actually going to use FileStream. So for FileStream, I have to have a separate file group for FileStream, and I have to have a place for it to put the FileStream files, and there it is. So this is now a database that supports file streams. Great, and I have the file stream feature turned on. So now what I'm going to do is create a table called IFTS demo. And at first, all I'm going to do is load into there the file names. So notice that this is the step that takes about 20 minutes. I'm not going to do this in front of you, which is basically going to do a recursive dir through the entire system and all the log file names that it can find it's going to get. And then this actually BCPs them in. So am I going to have to actually BCP the files, names of the files in there? Okay, well, it doesn't like that at all. Could not invalid object name IFTS what? Do you have that IFTS demo? Really? Did I not make that table yet? Probably not, Bob. No, I did. It's already there. Sorry? Oh, I'm in master. Thank you. Glad somebody's watching. There we go. I apparently wasn't. Okay. And what I did was I took that log file thing and I moved it to the root of... No, it still doesn't like that. What? I created the table in master. Thank you. What was I thinking? I was skipping so much stuff, I also skipped the use back to the database that I was using. which was nice. There we go. Now it's better. Okay. So it copied in 150 names of log files. Okay, great. Now we're going to do is we're going to alter this table to actually add some additional columns. Thank you, guys. And we're going to start off by actually making the GUID key a unique identifier key. So we're going to use this in the first place. This is what you had to do in 2005. We're going to use this as the docid column. So let's alter that table and put that in there. And then this is the step that's going to take a little while. It's actually going to go out and fetch each one of those files. So there's 156 of them. And be prepared for some problems because some of them are actually in use. So it's not going to be able to get all of them. But we're going to get all the files that we have in there in one by one. So while we wait for 156 files to load, one of the things that I wanted to show you in this demo was the fact that, there we go. When we make our full text search index, we're not going to use the file ID immediately as the key column. What we're going to use is the old SQL 2005 GUID key as the unique identifier column. And what that is going to do is that's going to have an effect on the full text index. It's not going to search as fast. I can probably cut this in the middle too. So what we're going to do is we're going to do one full text index with this as the key column and another full text index with this as the key column and see that it's much better for performance if you can have an integer column as the key column. By the way, one of the ones in the AdventureWorks database that does a full text search actually has a hierarchy ID as the column. And they don't really care if it's hierarchy ID or unique identifier GUID key. All they care is that it is an integer or it isn't an integer. There we go. So all of my ones that were in use are coming back with errors and the rest of them are loaded in there. Great. So now what we're going to do is we're going to create a full text catalog again here. And what we're going to do is create a full text search index here. Now notice what we did with this one. We made the key column that GUID key column. And so what that'll do is the doc IDs themselves, which is what full text search returns, are actually, and we're going to wait here until all the data has been indexed. Basically, we're going to wait until it prints indexing complete. We're looking at the population table, and we're just basically looking at this in a loop. And when it finishes indexing, it'll print out that it's completed indexing. Maybe I shouldn't have made this so many files. But the idea with this is that they return the doc ID, which is an integer number. And so if you have the index column be anything but an integer, they will have to do a correlation between the doc ID integer and the thing that is the unique identifier that corresponds to that. So that's what they're doing. And index is completed. Good. And so let's look at the query plan if we do a query here. Select star from contains table error. You'd probably find one of those in a log file pretty easily. We'll turn on the actual execution plan here, and there we go. Now, if we get the execution plan, notice that there's an extra step in here, which is right here. It's a lookup through the doc ID map. So, and notice that the lookup through the doc ID map is actually costing 70% of the query plan. We're going to fix that. Okay. So, we're going to fix it by actually changing, and we're going to drop this index. We're going to fix that by actually changing from using the unique identifier column into using the file ID, which is the integer column. It has to be integer for this to work right. Okay, there we go, because the doc ID itself is an integer. So we'll wait for this one to index for a little while. And what we're going to see is that doc ID lookup is going to be removed. And since it was 70% of the query plan, it's going to be replaced by a simpler lookup. It's actually going to be, oh, well, let's stop that, because every time it does the wait for delay, it's going to put out an execution plan, probably not what we want to do. There we go. Good. That was easy. All right, so let's look at the query plan from the same query now. Now that we have the integer as the key column rather than the unique identifier, notice that there is no match here, right? There is nothing. This was a table one. So remember in the last one we saw it was a contains one. With the contains one, they will still have to look up to get back to the rest of the table because I ask for the rest of the table. With a contains table or a free text table, all they have to do is return the stuff that's in the full text index. And so notice in this case, we've got rid of the doc ID match completely, and so it's going to be a lot faster to do it. So do realize that if you change your keys to integers, things will work a whole lot better. All right. Anything interesting after this? I think I've already showed you most of this stuff. Yeah, the internal tables. And here's the multimillionaire demo. I guess this will be good to show the thesaurus file. So let me go and show you about the loading the thesaurus file, because that's something we haven't done yet. Let's go back here and go to the root of C. The thesaurus all lives in individual files on the file system right now. Like I said, Denali doesn't seem to do anything to change that. I don't know if they have that in mind. I know they said once upon a time they would do that. And basically, here's the FT data directory under SQL Server. And notice there's all these files that begin with TS. And then you would actually use your locale ID to fill in the rest of it. So what I have is I have a new thesaurus file for English. And this was the old thesaurus file. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this back, do some queries with the old thesaurus. So this better be called New Bob. There we go. New Bob. All right. And then we're going to change this back. And we'll just look at these two thesaurus files to make sure I did this right. There we go. Okay, so the original thesaurus file looked like this. Hopefully it's XML. Hopefully it comes up in IE with the nice XML formatting. Great. And yeah, this is the original thesaurus file. Notice that it doesn't contain anything in it. Everything is commented out. Wonderful. Okay, the new thesaurus file, which is the one we're going to use to replace it, doesn't like that at all. Let's see what it's complaining about here. Okay, there. So the new thesaurus file looks like this. And basically in a thesaurus, you can tell whether or not it's accent sensitive. This isn't going to be an accent sensitive thesaurus. I have a hard time saying the word thesaurus. And expansion. So basically what it's going to say is, if you have Internet Explorer or IE or IE5, if you look for any of them, you're going to look for all of them. And so if I look for IE, I'm actually going to, you can tell this is an old thesaurus file, IE5. Okay, great. This is a replacement in the thesaurus. So basically, these are all the major misspellings of the word Microsoft right here. And so if it sees any of these patterns that are misspellings of the word Microsoft, it'll actually change them to the correct spelling of Microsoft. And also, this one does the same thing with Bill Gates. So notice this just shows that the sub doesn't have to come last. So if I put in Bill Gate misspelled this way or Bill Gate misspelled that way, then it's actually going to make it into Bill Gates. And this one actually does a substitution for Bill Gates and Microsoft Founder, so that if you look for one, you're going to get the other as well. Notice this is my new thesaurus file. So I've loaded back the old thesaurus file, so you have to refresh it once you've done that. So this is execute full text load thesaurus file. We're going to load it for locale ID 1033. So I've just loaded in the original English thesaurus file. So let's have a look at this. So, for example, if I get Bill Gates and multimillionaire, then I'm going to get a search on, and it's going to tell me exactly what it's going to search on with the old thesaurus file. Notice it does have the hyphen thing just as well, too. Multimillionaire is actually going to search for it as one word. But let's see if I can use forms of thesaurus with Bill Gates misspelled and Microsoft misspelled, and if it's going to look for anything else. And with the old thesaurus file in there, it doesn't. It just looks for the misspelled term Bill Gate and look for the misspelled term Microsoft. So let's go change our thesauruses. Is it thesauruses or thesauri? Around. And we change them around, we'll see that this works much better. Like I said, somebody was so impressed with this the last time I did it. They asked if they could buy a thesaurus file for their particular industry. I haven't been able to find any of those yet. Okay. So there we go, and we have to load it back in again. All right, and now we look for the misspelled Bill Gate and the misspelled Microsoft. You can see that it does actually get, and it does a substitution. Notice it doesn't even look for the misspelled form. So it's going to get Bill Gates and Microsoft correctly spelled. So that's basically what a thesaurus does. And again, if I wanted to go and look for the misspelled Bill Gates as well, then I could do a substitution replacement, I could do the other. Questions about that one? Am I getting on in time here? 2:134. No. Okay, good. So I've got enough time to do the rest of it. So remember that this did say stuff in full text search in Denali. So let's talk about some of the Denali full text search stuff. So the first thing that they wanted to change in Denali was something that people had noticed when they went from 2005 to 2008. So everybody went from 2005 to 2008 with high hopes and great expectations that everything was going to run much faster because it was now going to run in process. And notice that they announced it. I actually said it runs in process way too many times. And it was supposed to run really fast. And the indexing was supposed to run fairly fast. And didn't happen. Right. It does run fast most of the times, but there are times where the 2008 full-text search actually runs slower than the 2005 full-text search, even though it was in process. So they did a study and tried to figure out what they could do to make it run faster, why it ran slower, what they could do to make it run faster. And so what they did was quite a few performance improvements. They also wanted to go through and make some performance improvements in the indexing as well. For example, one of the things of the indexing is that the indexing wasn't multi-threaded. So now they're going to be able to throw as many threads at it as you have. I mean, I even have, you know, four processors on my machine here, you know, eight with hyper-threading. Actually, no, two and four. So, but if I go out and buy a 24-proc machine, they'd better use all the procs. So what they did is a couple of improvements for the, or quite a few improvements, actually, for the querying and quite a few improvements for the indexing. By the way, some of those improvements for the indexing are actually sifted into SQL Server 2008 Release 2 Service Pack 1. So if you do want to get these performance improvements now before Denali, install the Service Pack 1 when it comes out. It turns out that there's a CTP of Service Pack 1 that came out a couple days ago, but remember, it's a CTP. I would never install a CTP on anything that has the word production anywhere near it, right? Test it out, see if it's worthwhile, then you can put them on all your real servers later on. Okay, so let's talk about some of the performance improvements they made. The predicate performance improvements, as far as I know, are not in the Service Pack 1 for 2008 Release 2. And they're not going to be, I don't know if they're going to be backported or not to 2008 non-release 2 at this point. But they're not in 2008 Service Pack 2 as far as I know. Okay, so the first change that they made is something called predicate folding. And basically is if you wanted to search for many things with an and in between them, if you said, for example, contains Bob and contains Boschman, and actually use the word contains twice, what they would do is they'd change it to contains Bob and Boschman. So they're using the full text search and rather than the SQL and, which means they only have to invoke the full text search once instead of twice. People that were really good did this themselves anyway, right? They would realize that if they could do the and this way, they could do the and the other way. And there's quite a few of these patterns where they'll actually do that, constant folding. Faster time using the full text search. This is a streamed table valued function. Streamed table valued function means that it doesn't have to do the whole function before it comes back with the first couple rows, right? Everything is streamed. So what they've done is they've made the, or they will make the streamed table valued function use parallelization. Right now it would only run on one thread. Now it will throw as many threads at it as it can. Also, it's optimized for a top N select, which if you think about it is an excellent thing for full text search to do in the first place, right? You can have a top N for the free text table and for the contains table, but for the other ones, if you're actually putting in the SQL top N, it is now much more optimized for a select top end in SQL rather than the top N in full text search. So both of them are optimized, but this one is optimized as well. That's nice because really what you want to do in a search most of the time is put out the first page and let people stare at it for 5 seconds, right? The psychological thing that says people will stare at the first page for at least 5 seconds before they go to the next page. Okay. Index building speed. So they're going to use parallelization and master merge. So master merge is going to run a lot faster. And master merge won't take as many locks, or building won't take as many locks as it used to. A lot of times people notice that when they actually were doing a full text search index build, what happened is that it would take so many locks on the full text search index that it would slow down the building of it tremendously. So they're going to take more granular locks and they're going to take less locks. They're going to unlock the things as fast as they can. And this is something they didn't do in previous. This stuff all comes in Denali. The index building speed may actually be in the SP1. And I can give you a reference for that if you'd like to check it out. So the other thing that they did in Denali, actually they did two things that people wanted. The first thing that people wanted was people said they would like to search on properties. Now by properties I mean, let's see if I can show you properties here. By properties what I mean is properties of a document. So if I have, come on Bob, if I have a Word document, which is the most common case where you'd want to look for properties. There we go right here. So I made up a document called sample document. And all this document does is say, this is a sample document. That's the entire text of it. However, if I go and right-click and look at properties, you'll notice there's all these extra properties in here under details. And for Word document, that would be the author and the revision number and the version number and all this other good stuff. So when you use full text search now, it will actually search for things in the properties or in the document itself. It will actually search the properties, but you can't distinguish just the properties from it's in the document or it's in the properties. So if I want to search for specific properties, I'd like to be able to search for specific ones, and I'd like to be able to search a whole list of properties. And so they put in this infrastructure to allow you to do this. Okay, and should I have a demo of this just yet? No, I'm going to have a demo of both of them at the same time. So what you do to use property search is you define what they call property list. And I'm going to talk more about property lists when I do the demo. It's a list of properties that you can search on. And the property list can be specified per index, and they're actually internal SQL Server things. They're not files that live on the file system, which is kind of nice. Once you specify a new property list, however, you do have to update the index content, because obviously it can't go and figure out what your properties and what you're not in real time, right? You're going to have to re-index it before you can see the new property list take effect. It's used with an updated form of the DML and contains, and the iFilter that you're using must support extraction of properties. A lot of the iFilters that are out there only extract certain properties. A lot of them extract all the properties. It depends, right? The Windows, and I guess the interesting thing about this is Word and the Office documents. So the Office documents for Office 2007 and for Office before 2007 basically don't support the extraction of properties. The iFilters before that don't support them. The iFilters for Office 2010 do support the extraction of properties. And so therefore, what you're going to have to do this property type search is you're going to have Office 2010 documents. Interestingly, when I tried to use this, I found that the Office 2010 iFilters weren't loaded in there at all, the DocX ones. And so, therefore, what I had to do was go out to the web, find the Office 32 or 64 iFilters and actually load them in manually. So I actually wrote a blog entry on how to do all this stuff just so you can see it. Also realized that not every iFilter supports properties, like I said before. Okay. In addition, what they did was, the other thing they found people wanted was a near predicate that really worked like they thought it should work. And so there was a revised near predicate, and what they call the old near predicate is they call it one of those, you know, the old near predicate or something. I'll show you that when I get to there. Basically, you could specify how many search terms away you're going to search. So not just it's in the same document, but I want to search for it when it's 2 words away or 3 words away or 5 words away, something like that. And in addition to that, you can also specify if the orders of the search terms matter. So if I search for bike spokes, I can specify now that bike should come within 3 words of spokes, and I can also say that bike should come before spokes. And you can specify both or all of those. The original there's the nice word for it, right? The original near predicate is referred to as the generic proximity predicate. Yeah, generic as in they're both in the document, right? Okay, so let's do a demo of that. I have a demo of this, which I actually made up myself. And this demo is posted in its entirety with instructions on the web. It's on my blog. Why did I go there when I did copy the whole demo someplace else? All right, so let's do that. Gracious. What am I thinking? All right, so we'll go back to here. Go back to scripts. By the way, all these scripts will be posted on the SQL Skills website after the talk is done, or after the conference is over. And they're under reference material, and they'll be under old conferences. By the end of next week, or by the end of this week, this will be an old conference. Okay. And I don't usually post them until the conference is done. If you really, really, really must have them before this, send me mail. Okay. So this is FTS with a property list. Actually, I could have done these demos one at a time, couldn't I? Oh, look at that. And it brought up another instance of SQL Server Management Studio in some reasonable amount of time. Okay. So what I did was I went out to the web and I find the Office 2010 iFilters, and it's just an install, and I install them. But once you install them, you have to make full text search aware of the fact that they're there. And so the one time I install them, I have to load them in. After that, when SQL Server starts up, it will load up all the same iFilters. And so this is just SP Full Text Service, load OS resources. You don't have to tell it which iFilters to load. It'll go out to the registry and look for all of them. And let's just see that I've loaded the DocX iFilters in here. So notice I'm looking for DocX. There we go. Or that's .x. Come on, Bob. There we go, .x. So I've actually loaded the iFilter for the right one. There we go. Great. So I've got the right thing now. Let's create a database called test and use it. That test already exists, so we'll drop database test. Oh no, but that's where all my demos for tomorrow are. Well, they better not be. Okay, go. Huh. Watch, tomorrow you'll come to the... Oh, yeah, of course. Use it, Bob. There we go. You know, you could have used one of those if things, Bob. All right. There you go. So now we'll create a table called docs. Did I mess something up? Now we'll create a table called docs, and we're going to create the same really simple table as I had before. We're going to create a var binary, we're going to create a doc type, and we're going to create an ID, which is an integer, so we don't have to have a doc ID lookup. And from the books online, I went out and got some document properties. So create a search property list called document properties. Okay, right now I've created a search property list called document properties that have no properties in it whatsoever. And by the way, as far as I know, they're not going to give you search property lists when full text search comes out. They may be working on it. There isn't any in Denali. And in fact, when I reported they weren't going to give you any, the guy from the books online called me up and he goes, where did you read they were going to give you some property lists? There's nowhere that it says that in the books online. It's like, I swear that it used to. Okay. So what you have to do is you have to add these search properties one at a time. And notice what you're doing is you're adding a property here called title. So this would be the title of the document. And you also have to tell it the property set GUID and the property integer ID. Now, when I saw this, I said to myself, where exactly do you find the property set GUID and the property ID? And so to start out with, I actually used the ones that they had in the books online, and that's why the comment says it does. I have since found where you find these things. These turned out to be property set GUIDs and property IDs, something that was actually in the WinFS realm when WinFS was popular. And so basically what you can do is you can go out to the web. If you want to see where I have the exact web location in the books online in my blog entry, but basically you go out to the web and you find these huge sets of properties. And when I found the huge sets of properties and how many documents contain properties, I was really thrilled with the whole thing. So you can go out and look for properties of every kind of document you know can think of, and you can load in all the properties to these property sets. And I had thought of originally going out and making up a whole bunch of cool custom property sets and posting them up. I may still do that, but I'll tell you the disappointing part of this in a while. Let's have the cool part of it first. Okay. So anyway, that's where you go out and look for these properties. So alter search property list there. We're going to add the title, and we're going to add the author, and we're going to add a property called tags. Notice with Office documents, you can actually search over your own smart tags, which is kind of cool. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that document in there. So we'll make an FTS catalog, and we'll make an FTS index. There we go. And notice when I make the index, I have to specify what the search property list is. I better go faster, shouldn't I? Okay, and now start the population for this. Okay, fine. And because it's already populating. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and add that one sample document. And remember that I added that document. That document has the property Bob Boschman and the title sample document. So there we go right here. Okay, good. Now that I put that in, it should be pretty fast. You can also say full text index keywords by property to check to see if it's in there already. And now if I use contains, I can say contains but property, and the property I want to look for is title, and what I want to look for is the word sample. And if you remember, the title was sample document, so I'll get it. Or where the author contains Bob, then that's actually going to go out and get the one for me. And if I say the author contains Fred, then there's no Fred out there. Everybody okay with this? Great. Let's do the other demo really quick, because if people do have to go, I think there's like 10 minutes in between each talk, so let's go do the other one really quick, and then I'll tell you the fun part and the interesting part right after this. All right, here we go. So the NIR works like this now. AdventureWorks 2008 Release 2, and let's actually look for reflection and bracket, where reflection is near bracket. This is the old NIR, so if they both occur in the same document, it gets it. What about reflection within, and notice how many it got. It got 3. Okay, reflection within 2 words of bracket. This is reflection, bracket, and 2, obviously, and it'll go look for that. Great. Do I still have the same 3? Yeah, unfortunately, I still have the same 3. Okay, so let's make it so that I don't have the same 3. Here's reflection within two words of bracket, and reflection has to come before bracket. So within two words and comes before is equal to true. Comes before defaults to false. There we go. And notice in this case, I'm still getting some more documents. But let's switch it around. So let's find all the ones where reflector comes before bracket, right? Did I just do that? Yeah, bracket comes before reflector. Okay, so the opposite way. And notice we will not get as many this time. We only get two documents. Great, so that's the near. And the generic near is the old near. That's fine. The old near still matters, by the way, for ranking and rating, just like it did before. Okay, and you can use the tilde character and all this lovely stuff. Okay, now to the interesting part. So when I first saw this thing with the properties, I was kind of taken aback, and I wondered why anybody would care about properties. And then I thought to myself, you know, the Windows operating system has all these files, and all these files have all these cool properties in them, right? Has anybody ever taken a picture with a GPS camera and looked at the properties of the picture with the GPS camera? There's a million of them, right? And I'd really like to search on those things. And with a GPS camera, you even get the latitude and longitude. I could put those into the spatial data type, and I'd have some cool stuff. Well, and imagine if you had an MP3 set of files or WMA set of files, and they have properties on them as well. And I'd like to be able to search on those as well. And then I thought to myself, wasn't there a product in Windows that was going to do this? Because you can't search on properties now at all. Anybody remember the product in Windows that was going to do this? WinFS, right? WinFS was the property in Windows, or the product in Windows that was going to let you search on extended properties. That was the whole deal with WinFS. So I thought to myself, I wonder if this has anything to do with WinFS. And I went around and told everybody it did. And then I ran into one of the guys that work on the SQL team that now work on the WinFS team that now work on the SQL team. And he goes, yeah, you got it exactly right. That's sort of a really small explanation of WinFS, but there was a bunch of guys from the WinFS team that moved over to the SQL team and they brought their stuff with them. I said, what kind of stuff did they bring? And they said, well, in 2008, you remember the file stream? I said, yeah. He goes, that was a WinFS component. And it's like, oh, okay. I thought that was just a cool thing that they put in for SharePoint. No, it was a WinFS component. And you remember the hierarchy ID? Yeah, that was a WinFS component too. And it's like, oh, okay, I just thought they put that in there so the people that had hierarchies would do well. And so this property search thing is really from WinFS as well, and it's like, yeah, it really is. So I got all excited, right, because there is no other way to search these extended properties in Windows except to write your own program. And then I got unexcited a little bit because they're there for Office documents, but not for Office 2007. So you'd have to go to Office 2010 to be able to get these documents. Like there's no iFilter for doc that does this. It has to be a docx document. Does that leave out 2007 or is that put in 2007? 2007 actually had docx as well? Okay, so 2007, but before 2007 you can't do it. Oh, then the other thing is the GPS camera idea. Remember the caveats of this whole thing. The caveats of this whole thing is you have to have an iFilter that's able to extract those properties. So I actually went and looked at the list of iFilters, and there's no iFilter for JPEG file. And it's like, oh, that's not good. And there's no iFilter for GIF file. And it's like, oh, that's not good either. What's wrong? And so I went to talk to those guys, and they said, well, we put in all the files from the filters from Windows. And it's like, not for JPEG. And he said, why would you want JPEG? And I said, to look at the properties, right? And where's the one for MP3? Where's the one for WMA, right? Where are those things? Well, those actually might be components that aren't iFilters that were made specifically for WinFS. And right now, they do require iFilters. So what I am looking for, either to get out of the SQL team or to actually go find on my own, is iFilters against those things that can extract properties. Yes, sir? There's an XMP iFilter? Oh, XMP? So conceivably, I could use the X. Really? Say this again. Okay. There is an XMP iFilter, and so that should. Ooh, I'm impressed. Okay. So what I have to do now when I get home, or maybe this afternoon, or maybe at night, or, you know, now I'm excited again, right? Yeah, I have wireless. Is to just go up to the web, find all those properties that XMP extracts. It put some things out there that have those properties in them and make a property list out of them and see if they extract them. And if I do that, I'll write a blog against it. And if you want to beat me to it, go ahead and do it. Right? And we'll see what happens in this case. Because this was the disappointing part. So XMP is going to get me the what? The GPS type properties in a JPEG?
Yes. And if you Uh-huh.
I have to have Photoshop?
I'm not sure. You need an Adobe product.
I need an Adobe product. Okay. I actually... Okay. Well, my wife, who was a graphic, was database administrator for 30 years, is now an artist. And she has Photoshop. And so I'll do this when I get home. Sorry? I'll do this when I get home, really. And I'll let you know. So follow the blog and see if this is where it goes. And if not, the next time I'm up at Microsoft, I intend to harass those guys, too, about it. You said you had all the ones for Windows files. What happened to JPEG? By the way, you can download some third-party JPEG and MP3 ones, but they don't extract all the properties I want to extract. In other words, you can only see the properties that those things will extract, just like Office 2000 documents. You know, you're not going to see any properties there. Okay, so the interesting thing about this is what they announced at SQL Pass. This is what I can't show you. So I actually had to make sure I wasn't violating anybody's NDA, because I've heard of these things, but I haven't seen them. And so what I did is I went back and I looked through all the SQL Pass things that they said at SQL Pass, what they announced at SQL Pass. By the way, if you want to, I have a blog entry called What They Announced at SQL Pass About Denali That Is Not in CTP1, right? Because there's a lot of things like column store indexes they announced at SQL Pass. Those aren't at CTP1. And I'm not violating anybody's NDA because I was really rigorous about making sure they announced them. Okay. So this is what they announced at SQL Pass. In fact, they did a demo of it. They have this thing now called file table. And what a file table is a table over what could become part of the file system. I wonder where they got this component from, right? Could it possibly be from WinFS, right? And the idea of what you do is you enable file stream, and you have to enable file stream to be non-transactional, because obviously the file system, and what this will do is it'll make a SQL Server table over not a part of the existing file system, but it'll make it over something that looks like the file system. That's where the hierarchy ID comes in, because you can make your own directories, and then you can drag and drop files in there, and they're in this file table part of SQL Server. Now, the only sad part about this whole thing, can I have one more minute? Okay, bring the guy in and have him set up while I'm talking about this, because I don't need to do this anymore. The only sort of sad thing about this is that when you have these file tables, the GUIDs are in there rather than the doc IDs as integers, and so you're still going to have the doc ID lookup for these things. The other thing that's exciting that they've announced but they don't have, so you can come and set up if you want, is the fact that they have announced at SQL Pass the fact that in addition to having full-text search, they will actually have in Denali something called semantic search. And semantic search will be able to do things like look at a set of resumes and figure out which are the two closest matches in the set of resumes. Sorry about this, dude. I got to the exciting part. And I didn't see the time's up thing either. So anyway, look for those things with the next CTP at Denali that comes up, and I think you'll be real excited about them too. And with the XPS file, that might be pretty cool as well. This will look interesting on tape, right? Man leaves with his laptop in the middle. Okay, so I wanted to thank you for listening to all this. You now know what's in 2008. You now know what's in CTP1. You now know what might be coming after CTP1. And thank you for coming. And if you have any questions, I have cards up here. You can write me mail, anything you'd like to do. And look for that stuff in the blog.